I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. York, this is Democracy Now!
It was the evening of October 1st, 1969, when I first smuggled several hundred pages of top-secret documents out of my safe at the Rand Corporation. The study contained 47 volumes, 7,000 pages. My plan was to Xerox the study and reveal the secret history of the Vietnam War to the American people.
Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg has died at the age of 92, just months after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. His actions helped take down President Nixon, end the war in Vietnam, and lead to a major victory for press freedom. Henry Kissinger once called Ellsberg the most dangerous man in America. Today, we honor the life and legacy of Ellsberg in his own words.
If I were asked what regrets I have today, they would have to do with doing a job I was asked to do that I knew was wrong for the country, and I did it to the best of my ability. The war was carried on by people who acted like that.
We'll also look at how Dan Ellsberg became deeply involved in the anti-nuclear movement, which he detailed in his book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner, and his concerns about Ukraine, China, and more. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has wrapped up a two-day trip to China. On Monday, he met with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing for half an hour, as both sides expressed a desire to stabilize relations to relieve soaring tensions between the world powers. Blinken also met with China's top foreign affairs official, Wang Yi, who urged the United States to stop hyping up the threat posed by China. Blinken is the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit China since 2018. This is Chinese President Xi Jinping.
State-to-state interaction should always be based on mutual respect and sincerity. I hope that through this visit, Mr. Secretary, you will make more positive contributions to stabilizing China's U.S. relations.
After the talks concluded, Antony Blinken spoke to reporters in Beijing.
In every meeting, I stress that direct engagement and sustained communication at senior levels is the best way to responsibly manage our differences and ensure that competition does not veer into conflict. And I heard the same from my Chinese counterparts. We both agree on the need to stabilize our relationship.
Six Palestinians were killed and another 90 injured during a massive Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank Monday. The dead included a 15-year-old Palestinian boy. At least one Palestinian journalist was shot and injured. During the raid, which was met by fierce resistance, Israel deployed U.S.-made Apache helicopter gunships for the first time inside the West Bank in nearly 20 years. The raid came a day after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government agreed to accelerate the process for approving new settlements in the West Bank, despite criticism from the United Nations, European Union, and the United States. More than 3,000 people have died in Sudan over the past 2 months since fighting began between rival military factions, this according to Sudan's health minister. A new 72-hour ceasefire began Sunday, a day after an airstrike in the capital Khartoum killed 17, including 5 children. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has expressed alarm about the deteriorating situation in West Darfur.
I am particularly concerned by reports of gender-based and sexual violence and by the ethnic dimension of the violence in Jenin. Targeted attacks against civilians based on their ethnic identities could amount to crimes against humanity.
In news from Uganda, around 42 people, including 37 students, were killed on Friday in an attack on a school located near Uganda's border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. The children and teens were between the ages of 13 and 18. Ugandan authorities have blamed the attack on the Allied Democratic Forces, a group with ties to the Islamic State based in the DRC. Six students are believed to have been abducted. A group of African leaders have met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow to push for an end to the Ukraine war. This is South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking in Moscow.
And we are here to communicate a very clear message that we would like this war to be ended.
The presidents of Senegal, Zambia, and Comoros, as well as top envoys from Egypt, Uganda, and the Republic of Congo, also took part in the talks. Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg died Friday at the age of 92, just months after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Ellsberg risked his life in prison by copying and then leaking 7,000 pages of top-secret documents outlining the obscured history of the U.S. war in Vietnam. The leak helped take down President Nixon and the war in Vietnam and led to a major victory for press freedom. Ellsberg would go on to become deeply involved in the anti-war and anti-nuclear movements. He also inspired a new generation of whistleblowers. We'll spend the hour remembering Dan Ellsberg in his own words after headlines. The Justice Department has accused the Minneapolis Police Department of disproportionately targeting Black and Native American people and frequently using excessive and unlawful use of force. The findings come in an investigation launched after the police murder of George Floyd in May 2020. Attorney General Merrick Garland spoke Friday.
The patterns and practices we observed made what happened to George Floyd possible. As one city leader told us, quote, these systemic issues didn't just occur on May 25th, 2020. There were instances like that that were being reported by the community long before that.
The Washington Post is reporting the Justice Department and the FBI waited more than a year before opening a probe into the role played by former President Donald Trump and his top associates in the January 6th insurrection and efforts to overturn the 2020 election. According to the Washington Post, a top deputy to FBI Director Christopher Wray quashed a plan early on to directly investigate Trump. Attorney General Merrick Garland supported the FBI's decision to focus on individuals who raided the Capitol instead of Trump and his associates. Meanwhile, Donald Trump appeared on Fox News Monday and talked about being arraigned on federal felony charges for mishandling classified documents. During the interview, Trump appeared to admit he did not comply with requests to return classified documents. He was interviewed by Fox's Brett Baer.
And why not just hand them over then?
Because I had boxes. I want to go through the boxes and get all my personal things out. I don't want to hand that over to NARA yet. And I was very busy, as you've sort of seen.
Yeah, but according to the indictment, you then tell this aide to move to other locations after telling your lawyers to say you'd fully complied with the subpoena when you hadn't.
But before I send boxes over, I have to take all of my things out. These boxes were interspersed with all sorts of things.
The Gun Violence Archive reports there were at least 19 mass shootings over the long weekend in the United States. At least 12 people died, more than 100 were injured across the country. In Willowbrook, Illinois, one person died, 22 were hurt in a shooting in the parking lot of a mall during a Juneteenth celebration. In Washington state, two people were shot dead. Three were injured at a campground near a music festival. Meanwhile, in St. Louis, Missouri, a 17-year-old was shot dead. Another 11 teenagers were wounded at a party. In health news, the Associated Press reports 1.5 million people have been dropped from Medicaid in recent months as states begin to purge the rolls after the lifting of a pandemic-era rule on eligibility. The AP said most were dropped for not filling out paperwork. While the number of Medicaid recipients grew by over 20% during the pandemic, analysts estimate as many as 15 million people could lose their coverage over the next year. At least 170 people have died in northern India in a scorching heat wave overwhelming hospitals and morgues in the region. Power outages have left people with no running water, fans or air conditioners. Temperatures top 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Other regions of the world were also battered by heat waves in recent days. In Mexico, at least 8 people have died due to the extreme heat. Meanwhile, in the southern United States, at least 6 people were reported dead. Hundreds of thousands faced power outages as temperatures soared in Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Mississippi. Some 30 million people were under excessive heat warnings as the heat also set off a series of tornadoes and storms. Today marks World Refugee Day. According to the United Nations, the number of refugees globally has reached over 35 million. That's 8 million more than a year ago. This comes as concern is growing that as many as 700 people trying to reach Europe may have drowned in last week's shipwreck in Greece. Authorities have recovered 80 bodies, but hundreds more are feared to have drowned. Many of the passengers were from Egypt, Syria, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Palestine. On Monday, Pakistan declared a day of mourning for Pakistanis who drowned. The Greek Coast Guard is facing backlash over its failure to help rescue passengers before the overcrowded fishing boat sank. And United Nations member states have adopted an historic treaty to protect marine life in the high seas as warming ocean temperatures and pollution threaten millions of species. The first ever agreement will create a special UN body charged with managing conservation of ocean life and establish marine protected areas. The treaty will also establish new rules assessing the environmental impacts of exploitative commercial activities on the ocean, including excessive fishing. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we spend the hour remembering Pentagon whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who died Friday. Stay with us.
This country comes from the hearts of men, stood out from the crowd. And the time has come again for good men speaking out. There was a man behind closed doors who shared a secret truth. When he couldn't stand it anymore, he told everything he knew. And the people on the streets of the cities and towns all across this mighty land woke up from a dream when the word came down and began to understand.
In the Mind of Man, Song for Daniel Ellsberg by James Stein. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, we spend the hour remembering the life and legacy of one of the world's most famous whistleblowers, Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. He died Friday at the age of 92, just months after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. His family said he died peacefully at his home in no pain and released a statement that, quote, Daniel was a seeker of truth and a patriotic truth teller, an anti-war activist, a beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, a dear friend to many, and an inspiration to countless more, unquote. His son, Robert Ellsberg, shared how his father once said he would want his gravestone to say, he became a part of the anti-Vietnam and anti-nuclear movement. In 1971, Dan Ellsberg, then a top military strategist working for the RAND Corporation, risked life in prison by secretly copying and then leaking 7,000 pages of top-secret documents outlining the secret history of the U.S. war in Vietnam. The leak would end up helping to take down President Nixon, helping to end the war in Vietnam, and would lead to a major victory for press freedom. Henry Kissinger once called Ellsberg the most dangerous man in America. In 2009, a documentary of the same name told his story, which Dan Ellsberg narrated.
We are going to win.
Making national heroes out of those who steal secrets and publish them in the newspaper.
The hundreds of thousands we were killing was unjustified homicide, and I couldn't see the difference between that and murder. Murder had to be stopped.
This weekend, portions of a highly classified Pentagon document came to light for all the world to see, brought cries of outrage from Washington.
We gotta get this son of a bitch.
Yes, Kennedy did send in troops in violation of the Geneva Accord. Johnson did start the buildup before he said he was going to. These guys were lying through their teeth when they were talking to us. And here it is in black and white. There's no way of denying it.
The Times building is encircled by armed guards. We are printing tomorrow a top-secret government document.
A name has now come out as the possible source of the Times Pentagon documents. It is that of Daniel Ellsberg, the top policy analyst for the Defense and State Department.
I am prepared to answer to all the consequences of these decisions.
Henry Kissinger said that Daniel Ellsberg was the most dangerous man in America, and he had to be stopped.
The study was 47 volumes, 7,000 pages. It would take me months of Xeroxing.
We've dropped another 200,000 tons of bombs on Indochina. That's 10 Hiroshimas, one Hiroshima a week.
What has remained significant about the release of the Pentagon Papers is the decision by a public official to give priority to conscience as compared to career.
Daniel Ellsberg, whatever his intentions, gave aid and comfort to the enemy.
It was a crime from the start, carried out by four presidents, and now a fifth president was doing the same.
I'm not going to be part of this system of lying anymore.
It wasn't that we were on the wrong side. We were the wrong side.
That's the trailer for The Most Dangerous Man in America, Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers. The Nixon administration went to extraordinary lengths to silence and punish Ellsberg, including breaking into his psychiatrist's office. He was charged with violating the Espionage Act and faced over 100 years in prison. But the government's misconduct led to charges against him and Anthony Russo being dismissed. Dan Ellsberg said he'd been inspired to leak the documents by anti-war protesters. In fact, shortly before the Times first reported on the Pentagon Papers, Ellsberg took part in an anti-war protest in Washington, D.C. on May Day, 1971, as part of an affinity group with Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn. Over the past five decades, Dan Ellsberg remained a leading critic of U.S. militarism and U.S. nuclear weapons policy, as well as a prominent advocate for other whistleblowers. He wrote a memoir, Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, as well as the 2017 book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. Today, we'll feature our interviews with Dan Ellsberg over the years about Vietnam, as well as Ukraine, China, and the threat of nuclear war. We begin with our most recent interview, which was April 27th, when Dan joined us from his home in Kensington, California. He had just been recently diagnosed with inoperable pancreatic cancer. Dan talked about he went from being a military analyst to a whistleblower and why he risked going to jail in an effort to end the Vietnam War.
Just yesterday was my wife's birthday, and we recalled that it was on April 17th, 1965. Not everyone can remember their first date like that, but that was the first SDS march against the war. And I was working in the Pentagon on the war, pursuing the war. She was going to interview people in a nationwide interview program she had, and she induced me to carry her Ewer heavy phonograph around with her tape recorder to interview people. And I marched up to the White House hoping, carrying that recorder and hoping that I would not be in any picture of the Washington Post where my colleagues at the Pentagon would say, what? He's protesting the war on my one day off from the war during this. But the next day, I induced her to go to the Cherry Blossoms. That was our first date, and we've been together ever since. So that was 57 years ago.
she really was the one who exposed you, is this right, to the anti-war movement by forcing you to carry her tape recorder. I mean, you were protesting right outside where you worked. You'd gone from Rand Corporation to the Pentagon.
Actually, it was outside the Lincoln Memorial where we heard the speeches, and then we marched toward the White House and around the White House. I went back that evening to the Pentagon where I was working, having gotten her to promise to meet me the next day to go see the cherry blossoms. But I was very much in sympathy with what I was hearing on that stadium from I.F. Stone and others about the war. I felt at that time, as a Cold Warrior, that we were picking the wrong place to plant the flag on this one. This was a loser, and I was not enthusiastic about our getting involved in it. But that was my job, and I did it all too well. If I were asked what regrets I have today, they would have to do with doing a job I was asked to do that I knew was wrong for the country, and I did it to the best of my ability. The war was carried on by people who acted like that.
So I want to talk about what you decided to do and how seminal, how key the anti-war movement was to your thinking, not only meeting Patricia, but also seeing those war resistors, what were called draft dodgers, the draft resistors who said they'd rather be in prison than on the front lines in the war in Vietnam.
Well, many people, when the Pentagon Papers came out, a lot of people on the anti-war movement said, what's new about this is what we've been saying all along, which was true, which was that we had taken up a French neocolonial role, an imperial role, essentially, against the self-government of Vietnam, the sovereignty of Vietnam, and were doomed to suffer the same fate as the French, essentially, to keep killing people and losing people until we finally decided to go home and leave them ruling their own home. Well, that was known inside. The insiders who were pursuing the war and dropping the bombs, millions of tons of bombs, it came to be even later than this, knew the same thing and were doing it likewise. The question was what to do about it. All the people I was working with in the government by that time felt, everyone I could think of felt the war was hopeless, essentially. It was hopelessly stalemated and there was no coming out. The words hope, stalemate was taboo on the year I came back from Vietnam with hepatitis in 1967, after 2 years there. Lyndon Johnson had said no official is to use the word or hint at the word stalemate. And yet, that's where it was. So the war continued. People did their jobs, and it went on as though that judgment had not been made. And eventually, what I really noticed was that there were people who felt much as I did and who were doing an awful lot more about it than I was doing. Namely, these were young people who, you didn't have to be an expert, you didn't have to have a PhD in international relations as somebody to see the truth about the war in Vietnam. As somebody said, you don't have to be an ichthyologist to know when a fish stinks. And these young people refused to go to be drafted when they could have gone to Canada or Sweden or gotten a deferment or joined the Air Force National Guard like George W. Bush, somehow gotten out of the fighting. But no, they chose to give it as strong a resistance as they could nonviolently in the footsteps of Rosa Parks in the South and Martin Luther King and others, and to say, no, this is wrong. You have to do this over our bodies. We will not participate in this because it's wrong. And I realized when I met young men like this, like Bob Eaton and Randy Keeler, were on their way to prison simply to make the strongest message they could, which I believed as well, that the war was wrong. I realized I could think of doing what they did too, instead of just talking to insiders who felt as I did, but agreed there was just nothing you could do about it as long as the president wanted to carry on the war and his subordinates wanted to keep their jobs under the president, that they could, in fact, simply dissociate themselves from it and denounce the war openly. Very recently, we've seen very many comments that what the Pentagon Papers showed was that the war was not winnable. Actually, that had, and that's why I gave the Pentagon Papers, and that was the effect of them. Actually, none of the people who went to prison to protest the war did so because they thought the war was not winnable. They did it because they thought the war was wrong. And that's something I think that people have not succeeded, have not been willing to recognize all these years, not just that the war, not just that the U.S. had taken on some noble measure that wasn't quite energetic enough to pursue or had other, or was easily distracted from or something like that, but that our country was, like so many other countries, capable of doing wrong and killing people without good reason. And in effect, an imperial kind of operation like that of the Japanese or the French after the Japanese or the Chinese before either of them. And those were the footsteps we were walking in. Well, I think to this day, the very idea that the U.S. is in some ways comparable to those empires, that it is an empire, is a taboo. And a very unfortunate one, because it makes it impossible to understand what's going on. Why are we doing this? What's happening? Why in the world are we in this position of ever, time after time, of fighting against the self-determination or the nationalism of other countries and taking on those murderous tasks as opposed to dealing with problems at home? I think of our country as a covert empire. Where covert is a term of art in the Pentagon and the CIA in particular. And I worked with CIA people in Vietnam. My immediate boss there was a retired CIA general, General Edward Lansdale. And the word covert means plausibly deniable. It means not just secret. I'm doing something that I don't tell you about, but that I plant evidence suggests that I'm doing something different. And I'm not doing it. Somebody else is doing it. And the person above me is somebody else. Layer after layer to prevent the president from holding any accountability for what's happening. I think we not only feel we need and do be able to plausibly deny that we are an empire, that we run other people's governments, other people's police forces, that we decide who goes to jail and who gets shot in that country. And second, we deny the means we do to keep it a covert empire, assassinations, paramilitary, military buildups, and even overt wars in some cases, as in Vietnam or Iraq.
Dan, I wanted to go to that decision you made after giving your 13-year-old son, Robert, a copy of Thoreau's essay on civil disobedience. The civil disobedience you engaged in, this is a clip from that 2009 documentary, The Most Dangerous Man in America, Dan Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers.
It was the evening of October 1st, 1969, when I first smuggled several hundred pages of top-secret documents out of my safe at the Rand Corporation. The study contained 47 volumes, 7,000 pages. My plan was to Xerox the study and reveal the secret history of the Vietnam War to the American people.
The FBI was trying to find out who gave the New York Times a copy of the Pentagon's secret study.
Pow, like a thunderclap, you get the New York Times publishing the Pentagon Papers, and the country is panicking.
This is an attack on the whole integrity of government. If whole file cabinets can be stolen and then made available to the press, you can't have orderly government anymore.
A name has now come out as the possible source of the Times Pentagon documents. It is that of Daniel Ellsberg, the top policy analyst for the Defense and State Department.
I think it is time in this country to quit making national heroes out of those who steal secrets and publish them in the newspaper.
In the first year of marriage, we're talking about him going to prison for the rest of his life.
Dr. Ellsberg, you have a concern about the possibility of going to prison for this?
We have a quick plan.
Wouldn't you go to prison to tell such a story?
We felt so strongly that we were dealing with a national security crisis. Henry Kissinger said that Dr. Daniel Ellsberg was the most dangerous man in America, and he had to be stopped.
So that a clip from The Most Dangerous Man in America by Judith Ehrlich and Rick Goldsmith. I remember when we had you on, Dan, so many different times, beginning 27 years ago, you were one of our first guests on Democracy Now! But when this documentary came out, you and Patricia, your wife, came on the show with the directors. This goes to that point where you understood the stakes of what you were going to do. You brought your two little kids, 13-year-old Robert, 10-year-old Mary, to help you, not that they completely understood what you were doing, Xerox the 7,000 pages of the secret history